Record. I am so excited about this last chapter. Just amazing, this chapter.
Hello, everybody. We are on chapter 14. It's the last chapter of the entire sealed book, and it's the last chapter of the Acts of the Three Nephites. And, let's see, make it to... I guess that's going to record that way.
Does record.
Yes, I was going to make it full screen, but I think that's, it'll record.
You see it's
I think it records the whole.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay. All right, then.
Just in case.
Okay.
So it's chapter 14, Acts of Three Nephites. I want to preface this.
Can you look at your screen?
Wait a minute, automatic. Yeah, good.
Oh dear. Maybe they're wanting an update.
Yeah, just close it for now. We're in the middle.
Yeah, but I can't.
Yeah, up there on the, there was the little X on the right. You could, yeah, close that. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, all right, there we go. Maybe we should just start over.
No, we're fine.
Okay.
So I want to do a little intro.
Good.
Before
I have one too.
Oh, you have one too?
Yeah.
You go first. Or I'll go. Want me to go first?
Go ahead.
All right. Here's the intro I had in mind. That chapter, now it's a whole new subject. We're not doing the United Order. We're not doing other things. We are still in the area where Jesus is speaking. And he is going to explain the parable or the allegory, different, the allegory of the olive tree that's in the book of Jacob and the book of Mormon. An allegory is where a parable is a story that has meaning that teaches you a principle. An allegory is there's five or six things in the story, like an olive tree and the branches and the roots. And everything means something. The branches mean this. The fruit means this. The tree means this. The roots mean this. That's an allegory. In the Book of Mormon, they don't tell you what the allegory means. He just gives the allegory. And it was given first to Zenos, a prophet, about 700 BC. The thing I wanted to say to start is two things. One is there's one surprising thing in this that I've studied in preparation for the day, and I looked at it carefully. I want to comment on first. The branches are clearly people. The olive tree is the house of Israel. They tell you that right in it. The branches are people. They talk about grafting in branches, burning bad branches. Those are people. The purpose of the olive tree is to produce the fruit. What is the fruit? I've always thought the fruit, I would have said for sure, the fruit is the works of the people. It's what they produce. And when John the Baptist was preaching, he said, you must bring forth good fruit, or the axe will be laid to the root and the tree will be cut down. And then he said, the fruit is the works. You must bring forth, repent of your bad things and bring forth good works. So in my mind, it's clear the fruit is works. This is this parable takes over 10 pages. It's going to be, we won't be able to just read through it today. Just like in the Book of Mormon, it takes several pages. But he's going to do those pages and explain it. I will just say, notice that he does not say the fruit is the works. He says the fruit is the good feelings.
The sentiments.
The sentiments. Mm-hmm. The good feelings you have. And the bad fruit is the bad feelings people have. I will just make the comment that this is a deeper meaning. This, I believe, is true. But the good feelings lead to good works. the bad feelings lead to bad works. It's like it's a deeper meaning, but it's not really totally different because the parable talks about wanting to preserve the fruit. Anyway, that was the one thing. The other thing is, he only explains the first half. I noticed that last night. The first half, he'll say, okay, this is where the three branches were planted. This is, means this. He will explain some details. But when it gets up to our day, he doesn't explain any details anymore. He just repeats the parable.
Yep.
So, okay, those are things to notice. Now, what did you want to add?
Well, first of all, when I read this, I have always struggled with this. I thought it was a parable. I'd never heard of an allegory. Okay. I'd never heard of that. So I always thought of it as a parable, and I've always struggled with the meaning of it and what it represents. And so when I read this, I had several questions, which by the time that I was done reading it, I had answers and thoughts.
Awesome.
So one of my questions was, yes, this is, we're done with the United Order. We're doing a different thing. It's from God. Or I mean, it's from Jesus. He's going through this. And it became very clear to me a lot of what these meanings of the branches and the roots and the fruit, because I got that same thing. And so why is this so important? Why did he choose this? Why didn't he choose like the Good Samaritan or some of these other parables that teach, I'm sorry, we have a fly in here, that teach us things that are important in the United Order. And he chose this, which is long. It makes the chapter very long, and there's a lot to learn in it. So why, unless the importance of this is so important to be the very last chapter of his book, that there's something in here that is of great importance. And that's when I started to look at all of these symbolic things. And to me, I came up with, as a whole, this chapter has a whole meaning. And when we go through verse by verse, it might be that we have to look at several verses to get the meaning. I believe that the olive tree is Adam in the Garden of Eden. It's mankind. It is the beginning of God's work. And that it's important that the olive tree is strong. I think Jesus looks at mankind as being a strong entity that can survive several things, because he explained how the olive tree could survive so much, that it was like the strongest tree there was. And to me, that's mankind, that the Lord really believes in us. And then it talks about how the water is mixed with the bad water, and yet it can't be seen. And these several things that, yes, the Lord does explain as we go through here. But then he talks about the grass. Well, he talks about how he sends in his vineyard, which to me is the globe. It's everywhere on earth, his vineyard. And he allows trees to be planted everywhere. And that made me think of the Tower of Babel, where we were confused in language. And so everybody kind of ended up in different places. But the God didn't leave them there by themselves. It continues to say in here that we are being taught by God. He comes down and he talks to us and he teaches us, because he tells how he goes through the vineyard and he digs and he prunes and he harvests and he straightens things out. And I think that that's what he has done throughout all of mankind's life on earth. Then he talks about how there is a time where he comes and visits the vineyard with the idea that he is going to see how we're doing. So there's a meaning behind that. What is he looking for? Why did he choose this and say, this is what I'm looking for, and we don't have it, so we need to go on? And the talking between the Lord and the servant, And the servant isn't always necessarily mankind. I believe sometimes it might be an angel, that he's talking to the servant that is working with him in the vineyard. And then I also believe that the branches, when they're grafting, the branches, it is not just taking a branch and tying it to the other tree with a rope like we sometimes see gardeners doing. I think it's also the seed that you can take and put it down together. And as the seed grows, the little roots intertwine, and sometimes the trunks can grow right together, and then the branches come out. And then the fruit is, to me, yes, I got sediments just like you, which I've never seen before when I've studied this parable.
Well, I don't think anybody's ever said that before. That's
That as the sentiments grow, that the good sentiment, the love that we have for Heavenly Father and for Jesus, is going to surpass the sentiments that are being produced by the bad fruit branches. Yet we are all going to live together, all of these branches. So when God asks, are we going to just get rid of the whole vineyard? Like, I'm disappointed, things didn't work out. Then the servant says, let's give them another chance to try this. And the Lord says, well, okay, because I don't really want to get rid of it.
Very good. Thank you. Now I got to respond.
Yeah. Am I right?
Well, it's not that I know what's right, but no, I want to reinforce what you said. And I hadn't thought of two of those things. One is, you said you thought it started with Adam. He says that right in here, and I kind of missed it. We'll read that very soon.
Okay.
He said, this is, the roots are going all the way back to the righteous people from the beginning. And then he talks about how it survived the flood. The olive tree survived the flood. Well, yeah, see, the olive tree was before the flood. It survived the flood. It's the same olive tree. So that's supporting what he said. But I think the most important now is, why does he never says the word fruit in this whole anywhere. He talks about, he never says the word works.
Right.
He'll say the word fruit is the sentiments, like she said. Why? What you said at the very first, it fits in. We've been talking united order. What did they say was the most important thing all through the united order?
Your feelings.
The feelings, the good feelings. That was the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's going to go into the parable. It explains why this is here. It's not just a random, oh, let's stick that in at the end because we forgot. It's like, this is the cherry on the banana split. This is saying, by the way, that whole parable was about having good feelings, and that's what's needed for the united order.
And the end times.
And that's why he doesn't talk about works. Yes, the good feelings lead to works, but that's not his point at this time. So he's explaining the need for the feelings. And there's one more thing that's here that I don't believe is in the Book of Mormon version that Jacob summarized from Zenith. There's a river in the Book of Mormon. It just says there's a tree, and they water it, and they dung it, and they do the things. This says the tree is by a river.
Yep.
And the river brings it first good. We're being attacked by a fly here, and I'm just going to ignore it. But I'm having trouble.
Fly.
I will have good feelings.
Okay, good.
And say the fly is just excited about our program.
Okay.
And so he talks about the river itself gets polluted, and he compares it to the river in the dream of Lehi that started out pure, and then just a little bit down from the source of being pure, it gets polluted.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the olive trees go bad. Okay, now we've had lots of introduction.
Yeah. Sorry.
Let's start. Chapter 14. Why don't you go ahead?
Verse 1. And taking the book of Jacob into his hands, Jesus proceeded to say, this is why the scriptures of the ancient prophets speak by means of illustrations, so that seeing no one notices and does not pay attention to his message. For it is necessary that this simple truth related to your feelings, remain as a sacred secret from generation to generation, so that only in the final part of the fullness of times may this come in its purity and perfection, without ever having been distorted under the precepts of men.
Okay, so right there, he says the importance of the feelings. He's saying this has been a secret. That's why we've never heard it before.
Right.
He's saying the secret is, for this parable, is that it's all about these feelings. And he said, now it's coming forth at the end of the fullness of times. That's what we're in now.
Right.
And he's in the next verse, I think he's going to say why he's kept it a secret. Verse 2. Happy, therefore, are your eyes, for they watch, and your ears, for they hear the reading of these words of mine, and unravel this great mystery that was hidden by all the times predetermined by me and my Father, since before the foundation of the world, to be revealed to my humble followers. Only when the workers of my vineyard are ready to do the work in the field, abandoned by the earliest workers, for the purpose of restoring the gifts of God proceeding from his name, look at that.
Yeah.
Among those who take upon themselves the name of the Holy Begotten Son, Jesus Christ, and receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. So wait, I've got a comment. That would explain why John the Baptist only talked about the works. This has been a secret.
Yeah, because he couldn't say.
He didn't even know that. He was told, this is new.
Yes.
Okay. Let's read a couple of verses.
And thus you may recognize the true sentiments of my priesthood and my grace among the children of men. As to the gifts of the evil that were created by Satan to deceive and overcome the heavenly gifts in the world of mankind. Yeah, because Satan is so strong right now. Verse 4, listen, therefore, to him who has the desire to understand even more this great mystery, which is revealed to you in this moment in which my words come to you in the last days. For verily I, Jesus Christ, make known to you the meaning of the parable of the good olive tree prophesied to the house of Israel. Now that you can understand in its simplicity this analogy uttered by my servant Zenas with regard to good feelings from God to his children on earth.
Behold, the olive tree symbolically represents the people of God from the beginning of times. That's what you were saying with Adam.
Yep.
For it grows and produces fruit even on soils with little water, even though if cut off at the foot of its trunk, it has the vitality to regenerate itself again from its roots. And although an olive tree is immersed for many days under the waters of a flood, it tends to survive, and after lowering the waters, continues to produce fruits in abundance as if nothing had suffocated its branches. Remember that it was the leaf of an olive tree that the dove brought to Noah at the end of the flood. Oh, I've got a comment there. A lot of people don't think the flood was real, or they think the flood was symbolic. And
it was real.
It was real. There's a real flood. And there was an olive tree, and there was a real dove. And that olive tree survived a whole year underwater. Think about that. Oh, that is amazing. How many trees survived? Well, I've seen trees die in a month underwater. So not very long anyway. Okay, let's go on.
And if it were not enough, all their resistance to survive in critical and adverse situations, when grafted branches of a grafted olive tree into a good olive tree, it is able to make them into good olive trees again, so that they are replanted as branches of good olives again. For this reason, I and my Father compared the house of Israel to all those who make up the church of the Lamb to a good and leafy olive tree, which the Lord of the vineyard planted next to water currents for the purpose of producing fruits according to its season and whose leaves would never wither.
Okay, so that's why they chose olive tree. Of all the trees they might have chosen for the comparison. And now, to what shall I compare these water currents? See, this is a new part. To the good feelings derived from the gift of God, which flows along with the other sentiments derived from the love of God among the covenant people that persist in observing my commandments. But as it is written in the dream of my servant Lehi, these waters came from a spring near the tree of life, where the people of God must arrive and delight with their fruits. The word fruit is here.
Mm-hmm.
Delight with their fruits. But that's not the fruit from the olive tree. That's arriving at the tree of life. So that's the fruit of the tree of life. Provided they remain firmly grasped to the rod of iron, which will lead them, according to the words of Nephi, unto the fountains of living waters, that is, to the tree of life from which it proceeds its water source, which are symbols of the love of God. Yea, from this greater gift of mine I have spoken to you, whence proceeds all the good sentiments of my gospel.
So I think fruits and sentiments may be interchangeable at some point, but where we always thought the fruits produced the works, that's the sentiments, which are going to be the fruits, and we get in more how that blends as we graph things. This allegory has always confused me with how many times we move the roots around, I mean the branches around,
right? Yeah, it is.
And why we were doing this and how we ended up still with the original tree and the good fruits at that time. I thought the fruit, which is
right, perfect. And he even covered that back in verse 9. It says that on an olive tree, it could be almost all wild, and you graft in some good ones.
Yeah.
And then the tree actually becomes good. So when the shoots come up from that tree, they'll be good shoots, and you can plant them. By the way, I've seen the olive tree. That's how they really are. The shoots all come up. I saw them. I got to go to Israel for a while. And you can go plant those, just cut one off, stick it in the ground, and now you've got a good olive tree, and it started out a bad one. So amazing. Okay.
Nevertheless, the roots of the good olive tree, which is the house of Israel, stretched under the slopes of the river where its waters were already mingled with impurity, symbolically representing the sediments created by Satan, by whose priestly wiles he cast his gifts just below the source of God's gifts, and he came to defile his leafy olive tree, so that his roots, strewn on the slope of this river of filthy waters, seen by Lehi, began to absorb the impurities from the evil one, and its fruits, which are the feelings of the people who make up the house of Israel, because they were so distracted by other things, did not perceive the filth of the water that absorbed the seed in their hearts as being the depth of hell. To involve them in the senses, and thus the good olive tree grew and grew in its field, that is, among the nations of the world.
Okay, see, you said it was the whole world?
Yep.
Nations of the world.
Yep. And the olive tree is growing. It's out there.
It's out there.
And now it's
and
mixed.
That's the field, and it mixes. And one thing this, by the way, salt resolves, is in the indirectly, is in the dream of Lehi. It's something that used to really confuse me, and this was the book that solved this. That was one of the things that converted me. In the dream of Lehi, at first he talks about this wonderful pure river coming from the tree of life, and then all of a sudden, he sees it, and he sort of assumes it's pure all the way down. Then Nephi has the same vision, and he sees that it's filthy. And he says, oh yeah, my dad didn't notice it. It's filthy. Well, why didn't he notice? Because it started out from the tree of life, and it was all pure. You sort of expect it to stay pure. But it went bad, and he explains why it went bad right in front. So that's really the same kind of river.
And also, not only that it went bad, but why it wasn't noticeable.
Yeah, yeah, we just read that, yes.
Yeah.
11. The original olive tree, therefore, had grown old in its customs and traditions. And even though the streams of dirty water were mixed with clean waters, that is to say, feelings of all kinds coming from both sides, its roots were fed in such a way that its dirt appears in the fruit and also in its trunk, just above the earth, which prefigures the human heart. And thus the sap of its essence was lost because of the precepts of the enemy as being a plague infesting its inner structure.
Oh my goodness.
So the plague is, it's in the fruit, it's in the inner structure. Not so much.
They're not in the roots.
Not in the roots. No, and the roots under the ground, I believe, are going to be Adam down to the flood and everything. And then the tree, the trunk of the tree is Israel that came from them. And then the branches are the tribes and descendants of Israel.
So I missed that part because that explaining how so much of the tree can be bad, but the roots are always going to be safe and strong and produce better.
Because they're absorbing the good part of the water, apparently, and not the bad. That's
right.
What I understood too. Okay, go ahead to 12.
But behold, the Lord of the vineyard saw that his olive tree was beginning to wither. And so he cut down all his wild branches. Yea, the people who affected the people of Israel with their feelings contaminated by the filth of Satan and his grumbling, infecting all the nation of Israel in the days of Moses. So he took the people of Israel out and crossed the sea and was in.
Well, that, we're coming. That's
coming.
Coming.
That?
That's
okay.
Coming. Because Babylon's, this is, see, Zenos lived 700 BC. Babylonian captivity is about 600 BC, it starts.
Okay.
That's when Lehi leaves. So, and notice how he says grumblings. Back in what we read on the United Order, it said people grumbling was the single worst. Maybe that's what we reviewed before this started, how each person in the United Order is supposed to work on getting rid of bad
right.
habits. I still grumble at things anyway. Getting rid of grumbling or complaining against things might be a really good thing to get rid of as a first exercise in preparing for the United Order. But
okay.
Anyway, when then they were in the wilderness of their affliction, and God took from the midst of his people the wild branches, thus pruning his good olive tree and digging about, so that the good water coming from its clear spring descended to its roots again, so as to make their roots, their fruits pure and desirable for themselves, began to care for them in the hope of sprouting new and tender branches, so that they produce good fruit in the next season, that is, new people.
The next generation.
Well, there he said fruit again, new people in the next generation. But he's usually very consistent that the,
the branches are the
people. Hope of sprouting new and tender branches so that they produce fruit, which is the feelings. That is, new people are the branches in the next generation. And so it was according to your words. He's going to get down to Babylonians in the next couple of verses.
Okay.
Go ahead, why don't you with 14 and 15.
Okay. And after much time had passed, small and new branches began to sprout, who were the lesser prophets that arose between the nation of Israel and those who listened to his words and the law of Moses. 15. But behold, his feelings were still tender, while the canopy of the olive, which foreshadowed the nation's leaders in their entirety, was dying. in the sense that none of the priests were pure enough to the Lord of the vineyard, languishing the highest part of the good olive tree. Then the owner of the vineyard said to his servant that it is painful to think that this dedicated generation of new branches, which is still tender, while the canopy of my olive tree perishes and will not have strength in itself to keep my fruits in the good olive tree that I took care of so much all these days.
Okay, so this verse, I'm starting, he's correlating it to the history. That's another thing, by the way, that I, and all I studied before just from the Book of Mormon, I didn't understand that it really is a straight chronology. That as you go through the allegory, it's going through time in order.
Yes.
So here he says there were some minor prophets that did what they could. Sure enough, there's Samuel, there's Micah, there's a lot of prophets before 600 BC. Jonah is one, Amos is one, he's like 700-800 BC, and they all did what they could, but they could only do so much. Now we get to the Babylonian captivity. 16, it happened then that the Babylonians came like branches of a wild olive tree. Now, why are they wild olive tree? Because Babylonians are descendants, they're from Shem, but they're descendants of Arphaxad, the Chaldeans. They're the wild. Abraham was a Chaldean. He was called out as a Chaldean.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the tree he came from. Babylonians are really from the same tree, but they're a wild branch. So Babylonians came like branches.
There are cousins who live far, far away.
Yeah, cousins far, far away and not very good people. Well, yeah, we're friends now. It's okay. The Babylonians came like branches of a wild olive tree to be grafted among the nation of Israel. See, Israel goes into captivity over there and there was some intermarrying. For how much the main branches that were beginning to dry up were destroyed by the fire when the king of Babylon took captive many of the new and tender branches in order to graft them. He took Daniel, he took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, mm-hmm. he took a lot of the princes into captivity, and he spread them around the Mediterranean Ocean. And that's, it's going to be Nebuchadnezzar who's the servant who plants the branches. Who would have thought? It's not a regular prophet. Watch what happens here. Babylon took captive many of the new tender branches in order to graft them. He was a colonizer, Nebuchadnezzar was. According to the words of the Lord of the vineyard, I will graft them whithersoever I will. For though the nation of Babylon will perish, as it was prophesied, the owner of the vineyard should preserve its fruit from the mixture of races that would occur between the Jews and the Gentiles. Therefore, they were captives to this nation to fulfill the purpose of the Lord of the vineyard, to take from among the nations of the earth some new and tender branches of the house of Israel, and to graft them where it should be. So just a little point of history here that I've learned somewhere else is Nebuchadnezzar started colonies all around the Mediterranean Sea. And remember, he's over in Babylon. That's way over in the Middle East. That's not even the Near East. That's Babylon. That's in Iraq. Babylon's in Iraq. And his empire, he's now the king of the world, and he's colonizing, we're going to see, around the Mediterranean Sea. Okay.
It also says in history that when they took these tender branches, which was Daniel and the Abednego and everybody, and he put them in prison, and he wanted to sort of remake them, give them teaching to be more him.
Right.
And Daniel said, "No, we're not going to do that." And that is one area there that shows that the new and tender branches, even though they were young, they were strong. And they were going to carry forth, even though the king of Babylon is spreading.
Good this point. That's huge. Good. And that's what it said here. It said that that the Lord's intention was to take these tender branches and graft them into the people that were already in these other places to strengthen them. That's a wonderful example, because Daniel, of course, the intent of Nebuchadnezzar was to, he was taking the princes of the Jews.
Right.
He was going to mold them into, make them little Babylonians, and then have them go be the leaders in the different places. And of course, what happened is they're thrown in a fire and don't get burned. And suddenly, if you read Daniel chapter 4, it's the testimony of Nebuchadnezzar. He says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, now believe in the God of Israel. It's in that whole chapter. After he wanted people to bow down to his statue, he's converted by Daniel and troops. And Daniel goes through several kings of not only Babylon. When the Medes come in, he's the counselor and leader. And when the Persians come in, he lasts until Cyrus. He lives 70 years.
Wow.
And so he's molding them. Anyway, I liked your comment.
Well, it still is the purpose of the Lord of the Vineyard. So
right.
This is happening. And even though we can't see, or they at that time maybe didn't see the purpose, the Lord is still saying his vineyard, his olive trees
right.
are strong. They are mighty. They could be little and tender, but they're strong, and he believes in us.
Right.
He believes
and
in,
he's
in
doing
man.
His work.
Right.
This is not random. He didn't say, oh, no, Babylon came in and captured my people. Now
right.
I got to make a quick plan. It's like, no, this was prophesied by Zenos in detail 100 years before. Okay. I think you're on okay. 17.
And it came to pass in the days of those kings that Daniel, the servant of the Lord, became master of the magicians and astrologers from the east, and came to teach his princes and noble confederates and vassals, among whom were many Jews, which have passed their knowledge for your children, spreading from generation to generation, their knowledge of astrology, even among the many synagogues that were erected in the land of the east. When then the Lord of the vineyard went to hide the natural branches of the good olive tree in the nethermost parts of the vineyard, some in one part, others in another, spreading these apprentices of the wisdom of Daniel the prophet, according to his pleasure and will.
Okay, so you go first. I got a comment too.
Okay, so the Lord did take these young tender branches, these young prophets, and spread them in different parts of the vineyard.
Absolutely.
He didn't say, see, this is another thing that I think is so wonderful. The Lord had enough faith in his people, the Israelites and the Gentiles, and everybody together, that he knew if he took them and put them in some area, he didn't put them all in the most fertile part of the vineyard with the perfect water and soil and everything. He spread them throughout the world. And he knew that they were going to survive. It was going to be hard. But if he was worried about us,
right,
he'd have put us all in that happy spot in the vineyard where all the good soil was.
Right.
Even the good ones in the good soil had trouble.
They're going to go back too.
There, we're going to learn
about
that.
It's not just the soil.
Right.
Okay, let me, before I go on with 18, let me also comment that Nebuchadnezzar already had a bunch of astrologers, interpreters of the stars.
Yeah.
But how did they do on interpreting his dream? Really bad. They had no clue. And Daniel pipes up and says, the Lord in heaven will explain that dream. And he explains the head of the gold and the dream. And that's a chronology through history too. And guess who gets to be the head of gold? Nebuchadnezzar is the head. The non-modern interpretations always say that those were all full nations. But if you read the interpretation, Nebuchadnezzar is the head, and he stands for the whole nation. And each one of them, Alexander is the head of the Greeks. There's one man that's the head of each one that's the main. A nation is like the shadow of this main leader guy. That's one point. So Daniel becomes the chief astrologer because he can do the dreams. And it's also astronomer. So now it's going to be Daniel who is teaching them instead of the other way around. He's progressed from a kid who's going to be trained by them into the master head honcho of all of the interpretation of the stars and signs. Okay, verse 18. Isn't this fun? Have you ever had this much fun reading
scripture? We're learning so much.
All right, 18. And it came to pass that a long time went by, and the Lord of the vineyard said to his servant, come, let us go down to the vineyard to work on it. Now, I think this is going to be all the way up to the time of Christ. Let's see. Okay. And it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard and also his servant went down into the vineyard to work. It was when the words of Isaiah being recited. Now, Isaiah was before Babylon. He's 700 B.C. But the words of Isaiah, both recited and researched in the east. And by the way, I've got a comment on the word east, a capital east, in the east. That seems to refer to the whole eastern hemisphere. And the west is going to be the western hemisphere. So east is not just east of Jerusalem, because Rome and Greece are going to be said to be in the east. Both recited and researched. That's great. Recited and researched in the east, the words of Isaiah, were fulfilled through the teachings propagated by Belteshazzar, that was the Babylonian name for Daniel, in the wisdom schools of Babylon, where they studied the scriptures with all the peoples in relation to the future descendant. Now that's going to be Christ. So they had studied the future descendant and up until even among the instructed rabbis of the Hebrew people in their respective synagogues in distant lands. Let me read the next verse too. Which had been grafted into the wild olive tree, and for this reason, they learned to map the heavens so that they could identify that star that had been foretold by the prophets that does not belong to the starry skies, for how much its manifestation in the night sky would foreshadow the birth of the promised descendant among men. In other words, they knew about the star of Bethlehem, the star that would herald the coming of Christ. Mm-hmm. The three wise men, or the
came
number,
from the
come from the east.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that recognize the star, and they go to Herod, and he says, what star? And his wise men scramble around, and they're not sure of what star, but they are sure that they find that the prophecy in the bar in Bethlehem. But so that goes back to Daniel. And I had studied this separately. Mm-hmm. Daniel, it turns out, taught Zoroaster, who was the head of the Persian religion. And so the Zoroastrians, the three wise men are supposed to have been Zoroaster. Magi is a word that means priest in the Zoroastrian religion. And it is where we get our word magic. So when it says chief of magic, that ties right into the Magi.
Yep.
Okay, so the point is they studied the stars and made star maps, and that's what I do. So I get really excited at this part. Go ahead, verse 20.
Okay. These then were the natural branches of the good olive tree in a foreign land. The people from the east who were reading these things. And so did these branches of the olive tree that were brought and grafted into the good olive tree all have borne fruit in their respective station and have mingled together. So the good in everyone, the sentiment, had been out there kind of spreading around.
Yeah.
And after a long time, a child is born in the land of Jerusalem, as prophesied by the ancient prophets, in the city of Bethlehem. And the people that walked in darkness saw a great light. And they that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, yea, in the land of the east, the light of the morning shone upon them, proclaiming the coming of him that would be called by the name of Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace.
Okay, so in that verse, now there's footnotes in the book here to both Micah and Isaiah. And for those that recognize the scriptures, that whole verse was quoting Micah of being born in Bethlehem and the Wonderful Counselor of Isaiah. So those are prophecies being fulfilled by the child being born but when the sign was given. And that's what these one men knew about. Verse 22, and guided by this light was that the astrologers of the Orient took the way to the land of Israel, where the throne of David is set as it is prophesied, in search of the land of Naphtali, in the way of Jordan, Galilee of the nations. Then the fruits of the branches that came out of the wild olive tree and were attentive to the signs. See, the branches came out. That's people. See, the branches came out. And they were attentive to the signs of every season, whose branches were scattered through the regions of the east. And the Lord of the vineyard saw that they were good branches, and its fruit, that is, the sentiments of the Jews born in the east and educated in the synagogues of that region, according to the teachings of the prophets, were similar to the fruits of the Jews in the land of Israel, that is, the natural feelings. So, you get that, right? That I'm just going to repeat it because some of these words are hard. The ones in the east that had been the wild branches, which by this time are Persians, had been taught. They had Jews over there. They had synagogues. They were on a good path and had the good feelings, and they can come and worship and could fit in. In fact, we're going to talk about some of these men pretty soon over in verse 29, and they're going to fit in very well with the Jews in Jerusalem because they've become good fruit, good branches instead of the wild branches. Okay, so
verse 24.
Right, 24, go ahead.
For this reason, they were easy to mix among their brethren in the land of their ancestors. For they absorbed the moisture of its root, so that its root produced much strength. And because of the great strength of the root, the grafted branches produced good fruits, so that they could be grafted again into the good olive tree. That is, that they could mix without being aware of the difference between one and the other. So they're the same because of the sentiments.
Yeah.
The branches, the people.
The Jewish in synagogues and in tune with the Spirit.
Yep. And they were able to go back to the root area. The root area, so they produced much strength. And the root and the strength of it is what grafted, was able to graft in those people and bring them together.
And just a preview of what's coming, I'm not sure how long far we're going to get today, because
I was wondering what time
this goes up. It's just afternoon. Okay. But this goes on for another 8 pages.
Well, yeah, it goes into the first
So I think we're going to stop where here, in here somewhere. Yeah, it goes into 60 verses, so we're going to get to about 30 today. How's that? But what's going to come up just in the next few verses is the names of three men, Nicodemus, Joseph of Arimathea, and Lazarus. All three of those men are prominent in the New Testament. Two of them, Joseph and Nicodemus, are in the Sanhedrin, the leadership of the Jews. What it's going to say here is all three of those men actually came from what used to be good branches planted in the wild areas. Oh, we didn't talk about Nethermost. I got to sneak in we're going to read it. I'll sneak it in when he says the names of the cities. Let's go on.
Okay. Because this is the Lord saying, this is a really cool verse coming up.
Okay. Are we on, is it 26?
25.
And it came to pass that the servant said to his master, Yeah, this is the part I want to talk about.
See?
This confused me so much until this book came along. How art thou come to plant this plant here, this tree, or this branch of the tree? For behold, the east is the lowest and unproductive part of all the land of the vineyard. I'm going to say it right now. The word nethermost means lowest. The Netherlands are the country below sea level. Nether is low. Mm-hmm. Nether also meant the nether world is the underworld, or it's like the satanic world, it's like a bad place. So all the time when I've read this before, I hate to get personal, but I just always thought it meant like the Netherlands, like low. It doesn't. It means the unproductive. It means evil. It means he's planting bad. It means he's planting his good trees in the bad parts of the garden where they ought to get overcome. Like you said, he has faith in his little branches.
Right.
That he can plant them in places like that are evil, like Rome and Greece and stuff. And that they're going to do okay.
And the servant was confused.
And the servant's saying, what are you doing? You ought to plant the trees in the good soil, and you're planting in the bad. So let's see what the Lord says. The east was the lowest and unproductive part of all the land of the vineyard. And the Lord of the vineyard said to him, give me no counsel. I knew it was an unproductive piece of land. So I told you that I have treated this first tree all this time. And you see that it produced many fruits. Gather them, therefore, and keep them for the proper season that I may bring them unto you. So, in other words, I know what I'm doing. I've made this plant strong. I've bred it for a long time. It's going to be okay.
All right, 26. And it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard said unto his servant, look here. See that I have also planted another branch, yea, a second branch, in the tree of this unproductive land of the east. And you know that this piece of land was more unproductive than the first. But look at the tree. Behold, I have dealt with her all this time, and she bore many fruits. Gather them also, and keep them for a due season, that I may preserve them for myself.
So remember that this is happening around the time of Christ. So they planted these branches back in 600 years BC in time of Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay.
Now they went away for a long time. Now they've come back, and he's saying, look, you were whining about me planting in the... in the bad place.
Bad. Look at this bad.
And then it's doing great. So verse 27, it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard spake again to his servant. Look here, see another branch. This is going to be the third one. Another branch which I have planted, yea, a third of the Orient. And behold, I have dealt with him the him and her is implied. I think these are really all, the trees are all really feminine, but anyway, I have dealt with him also, the tree, and brought forth good fruit, and all of these branches I will bring.
All of these three branches,
I will bring those who will serve me. I'll read one more and then you go.
Okay.
And from these three productive branches, coming from the unproductive land from which the Lord the vineyard mentioned to his servant, came Jews from the school that maps the stars in order to accompany the development of this boy who was born in Bethlehem in the land of Jerusalem. Before we go on, he's going to mention three men now. I wasn't sure when I first read this if these three men are the same as the three wise men.
No.
And I'm still not sure, and he doesn't say they are, so I don't think we should assume that. There were some wise men that came and recognized the star, and the Bible says that they returned back home.
Eventually, yeah.
This is going to say that the Lord picked one man from each of these three branches, and he's going to send them to help tutor Jesus as he grows up. So you go ahead.
The other thing I may note was in all of these, when he talks about these three areas, he says to his servant in each of them, gather them and keep them for the proper season.
Right.
That I may bring them unto me. So it could mean literally go out there and cut that branch off and bring it in, but it could also be stating that gather them, watch over them, take care of them, because these are the ones that are going to help me
right
when I need them. They're strong, strong, strong.
But in this case, he's going to talk about three,
that,
and they literally
separate.
Are moved
yeah.
from where they're born and end up in Jerusalem in key places. V29, now we're getting to the good stuff. And then we'll stop after 30, I think.
Okay. 29, being the first of these three, Bani?
Yeah, I don't know.
Noble rabbi over the synagogues of Greece, which caused him to be accepted into the sect of the Pharisees in Jerusalem, where he had established his residence from my birth, Jesus' birth, until the days of my resurrection. And among the natural Jews of the good olive tree, he mixed with the name of Nicodemus.
Okay, so Nicodemus is from Greece.
Yep.
And we know he's on the Sanhedrin, and he was the one on Jesus' side, even in the final trial. Anyway, so Nicodemus is, so Greece is one of the places where the branches were planted.
Okay.
You go on.
The second, known as Joseph, Jewish born in Rome, an appointed magistrate in the land of Judea, with powers derived from a judge over the city of Arimathea, which was situated 3 hours northwest of Jerusalem, where he was a member of the Sanhedrin.
Yeah.
But my particular disciple.
Okay, so the second one is from Rome. Joseph of Arimathea was born in Rome. Who would have thought? And he became a big shot. I've read places he was like either the richest or the second or third richest man in Jerusalem. And they say he's from Arimathea, which is a couple of hours, it says, north of Jerusalem. So he came to the city with a lot of power and influence, and that's why he also is going to be on the Sanhedrin. I believe he's in this. And anyway.
Third noble merchant of the region of Antioch. He preferred to stay away from the leaven of the Pharisees in Bethany under the name Lazarus.
So Lazarus is from Antioch. So those three branches were planted in Rome. This was my understanding. The first one would have been Antioch. That isn't so bad. And then the second in Greece, where he said, this is not good. These are really pagans. And then the last one, Rome, which is like, this is where the great and abominable is going to be centered, you know.
I know.
Sure what you're thinking? All right, read the last verse.
30. These were the three branches from the wild olive tree planted in the lowlands of the Orient and were good friends from the beginning to the end of my journey on the earth of their ancestors. They were Jesus's friends.
Yeah.
Good friends to Jesus.
So all three of those, Joseph of Arimathea, remember he's the one that got the body of Jesus after the crucifixion. Lazarus was where Jesus eats the supper just before. That's where Mary comes and anoints him with oil in preparation. And then Lazarus, who he raised from the dead.
That's what I was thinking.
And then Nicodemus is the one that said, tell me, how do I get born again? So these are three of the big leaders. So see how the Lord, look how God prepared that, even for Jesus, who's going to come, and you'd think he'd be strong enough to withstand anything. He's got this huge mission, but these three men were prepared from those three branches to be friends to Jesus. And that's probably, I think that might be a good place
to
stop.
Yeah, because we go into another thought there.
It's going to switch to another thought. Then he's going to go on with the other branches to Lehi. So I think that's a good place to stop, because we've done several pages. We got through 2, 4, 6. We got through 8 pages and there's 8 left. So
yeah, that's good.
Anyway, so for all of my friends who said, I read the book and there's nothing new there.
Yeah.
I can only say that Mauricio, when I talked to him in Brazil, he said, actually, the book is still sealed. It's called the sealed book, not the book that was sealed. He said, you've got to read by the Spirit or you're not going to understand a lot of things. So I think we've all understood, at least we have understood, more than we did before. And I've...
Well, I know I have.
And I wrote a whole paper on this last year when I was... which got me into this. Okay, with that in mind, I think we're just going to close and we're going to end the meeting. So hopefully that's been enlightening and fun for you, and we enjoyed it. So
yes, thank you.
Finish next week.